Welcome to this session. It's great to have you with us. So this session is Life Sciences, the Future of Biological Evolution and Faith. And our first speaker is no stranger to the ASA. So it's a delight to have Cy Gart with us. And Cy's topic for today is assembly theory and abiogenesis. So hope you enjoy this talk. Welcome, Cy.
This is somewhat of an unusual talk, I think, especially for me, because I'm not presenting any of my own work at all, and I'm actually presenting this as a way to get feedback. So I'm going to try to cut it as short as I can, have as much time for discussion as possible. But if you have some thoughts and ideas, please find me during the meeting and tell me what you think, because that's why I'm presenting this. I'm really looking for feedback. And as you'll see, I've already had some. So assembly theory is something I had never heard of until I saw a paper in Nature, which the reference will be up in a minute. And it's a chemical, purely chemistry theory about how molecules are put together and made. And a couple of people who are very famous in the origin of life field, especially as related to astrobiology, that is Sarah Walker and Lee Cronin, and their colleagues, especially Marshall, have decided to try to use assembly theory as a way, and not just theory, but assembly methodology, in other words, how molecules are put together, to determine if they could come up with a method for looking at the possibility of life on other planets. And this is the paper that I'm going to talk about. It's in Nature Communications, published in 2021. It says nothing in this paper about abiogenesis or how any of the data relates to abiogenesis. What it does do is describes a method using mass spectroscopy and also using assembly theory to determine a special metric, which they call the MA, for the structural complexity of chemicals. And the reason they're developing this method is to use it in searching for biological signatures. And this is part of NASA's astrobiology program. How do we determine whether a body out in space may contain life? And of course, mass spec is something that can be put on a spaceship and used in that sense. And one of their findings was that there is an existence, of a threshold of chemical complexity for abiotically created molecules. Okay, so in the origin of life, we talk about this all the time. How do biomolecules get made outside of life, abiotically? But the significance of this finding for abiogenesis is not discussed at all in the paper, but of course I'll talk about it, and in a later paper there is some mention of it. Now, this is, I'm going to show some figures from the paper. This is a kind of an overview, diagrammatically, of what assembly theory does and what the MA index is. And, for the chemists in the crowd, I'm sure you're happy. For everyone else, you can blink or close your eyes for a few minutes, seconds, because I'm not going to spend a lot of time on here. But what it shows is at the end of each of these pathways is a molecule. In the first case, it happens to be ATP. And you see that assembly theory has to do with the number of bonds and the MA, that value that goes from 2 to 3 to 8 to 9 to 12, etc., all the way up to 21, is the index, the mass index, which is determined by mass spectroscopy, but also can be predicted by theory. And I'm not going to discuss the theory at all. And for some other examples, penicillin, which is a complicated structure, has an MA of 17. The amino acid tryptophan is 12, and the amino acid asparagine is only 7. And this is not simply the number of bonds. It's much more complicated than that, but it does work out pretty well. Here are some more examples. Notice that most of the amino acids are fairly low numbers. There's only a few numbers here that are above that threshold that I mentioned, and one of them is a drug called sildenafil. I don't know what that is, but there are some other things here. Now, let's get back to this issue of ATP. And its mass MA, I'm not sure what that stands, I don't remember what it stands for, but that index of assembly theory is 21. Keep that in mind. And here's one of the main figures. And what you see is that there are many, many sources of chemicals that were tested. Everything from a group of dipeptides to the material that came out of miliuri, the miliuri experiment. They have coal on here, beer, yeast. Some of these things are biotic. Some of these things are abiotic. And they looked at, I don't know how many, several million different individual chemicals, and they came up with ranges of MA values. And what was very interesting in all this work was there seemed to be a threshold where, which is about 15, where everything that is only things that came from living sources had an MA value of over 15. And this figure, the green, shows the range of MA values for living sources, for biotically produced chemicals. The orange peak at the left side is abiotic. And what you see is that the chemicals in life forms go everywhere from 0 up to 30, but the abiotic chemicals do not pass 15. So in other words, an MA value of over 15 is presumed to come only from life, and that is the signature that can be used to determine whether life exists on another body. So I was so intrigued with this that I published a paper in this magazine some of you may have heard of called God and Nature. And I published that in the winter 2023 edition issue, which is 2 issues ago. And what I said was that they emphasized their interest is not in the absolute probability of a specific molecule ever forming, but in the presence, it is the complex molecule's presence in abundant quantities that an astrobiologist would look for as a mark of the life. And the reason I put that in was, at first glance, that suggests that ATP cannot be produced, for example, without life. And that would destroy almost all current research in the abiotic synthesis of compounds needed to get life started. For example, RNA, DNA would be impossible to make. So that didn't seem quite likely. And I was wondering whether this is the answer. Was they're not really talking about whether it exists at all, but whether there's sufficient quantity of it to show that there's a mark of the life. I don't think I'll skip that. Now, in that paper, I asked, as I'm asking today, for people to contribute their own thoughts and answers to the question, how could this result be consonant with ideas in abiogenesis that require abiotic synthesis of complex compounds greater than an MA 15? Larry Funk, who unfortunately is not here, but he is an ASA member at Wheaton College, did do that. He submitted a paper to God and Nature, which we published in the spring. And he wrote that the occurrence of complex metabolic pathways driven not by high MA enzymes, in other words, proteins, which would be way above the threshold, but by very low MA metal ions, and that's been shown, suggests the possibility that the high MA molecules may have emerged in the process of gradual progression towards systems and would have increasing biotic characteristics. So this is one way out. Okay, maybe all these compounds were produced by metal catalysis, even though that was not found in the paper. And he wrote another paragraph, which I won't read out loud, but what he said was that that basically, at the end, he said he doesn't really know what he thinks. He doesn't really say what he thinks could explain this result, but he does say that this would be fine-tuning of chemistry on a grand scale. And, of course, brings in the idea of the creator ensuring life's occurrence, which I agree with. And I think that actually Larry, although I really liked his paper, he didn't really answer the question completely as to what could be the answer as to why this is. And then another paper was published, which I found later in Entropy a year later, by the same authors, who said, "It is important to stress that we are not arguing that the threshold cannot be crossed without biology." Okay, because that is an argument that seems to come from the data. But they're saying they're not saying that. "Since a biological system developing from purely abiotic ones has clearly happened at least once." Okay, so that's a statement that they make. And then they say, "However, this would require systems outside of our model." In other words, beyond chemistry, such as replication, duplication, and evolution. And I agree with that, but that presents a problem. And that is, they mentioned replication, they mentioned evolution, but self-replication is required for evolution, and evolution is required for self-replication. In other words, the mechanism of evolution requires an accurate self-replication, which comes from a very complex process of protein synthesis and DNA replication, et cetera, which is something that we don't know how it developed, but we can sort of rule out biological evolution for that, because that's required. It's required to have accurate self-replication before you can get the process of accurate inheritance, which is required for evolution. So it's circular. And that's the basic enigma, which is what I just said, and I'll go on. And so where are we? Well, I think we need to find some new biochemical laws that allow for the origin of biology and chemistry, because we haven't been able to do that yet. And I think that these laws, and I'm going way outside of the paper now, I'm talking about my own ideas. These laws may include previously forbidden concepts like teleology, agency, and cognition. It's been recently found that, and this is very interesting because it relates to the talk we just heard on AI, it's been found that even bacteria and all of life show some indication of ability to have cognition and what is defined as intelligence. That's another topic. So while some biologists say that such concepts that I, in the second bulletin, smack of theological inroads into science, it's also true that many non-theist scientists are now publishing papers showing the role of all three of these things in new theories of evolutionary biology. There's even now a field called cognition-based evolution. So I think that's the hope. But in terms of the data of the assembly theory, what I'm really interested in is anybody who has an idea of how that work can be true and we still get abiogenesis from chemistry. In other words, we still get biology coming from chemistry when it looks like there's some threshold that would not allow even a dipeptide to be made. Is, I think, an open question, and I'd love to hear from this audience any comments or ideas that might explain it. And I stop there.
Thank you very much. Yeah, here comes the troublemaker, right? No. Thank you, Cy. I appreciate that. I enjoyed the interchange there, and I like your reasoning, but I would ask your comment on one point. Where you said, let's see, what was that slide? Where you said evolution is required for self-replication. And I would agree with that, of course, when we're talking about self-replication of a DNA-based system.
But do you really think that it is fair to impose that restriction to an earlier set where you're replicating simple peptides? It seems to me that an analog of evolution and selection is possible there, which is what we tried to articulate in our paper in March. It just seems to me, and I may be wrong here, that that statement is one that comes from current modern day life and is being imposed on an earlier set where it may or may not be true.
This will shock you, Randy, but I agree.
Oh, no. No, that's not good. You can't agree with me yet. We have a lot more discussion to do, because if we agree, then I don't learn anything.
No, the reason I agree with you is because, earlier than, say, DNA replication or life replication, cell replication, there was probably chemical evolution where selection was based on things like hydrolysis, stability, that kind of thing. So I don't dispute that. But the problem is, this is all about finding life as we know it. So how do we get to, a living cell, which would be the minimal thing that NASA would be looking for on a planet? That's where biotics begins. And so to get to a living cell and to get to a living cell that divides and can grow, there we need evolution. Because, and evolution is a process that's very complex, because it requires all the mechanisms of biochemical inheritance, which is protein synthesis, DNA replication, all of that. So that's a tricky issue, which is being investigated by many, many people.
Okay. Good. So we still have something to discuss.
Oh, yeah. Plenty. Yeah. We're not done.
Thank you for the interesting talk. I may capture the rally, but the cognition is required for revolution. I think this is not just from chemistry to biology. Even in the very simple system like formation of the small molecules, you need the basic information. Otherwise, it never forms. We do the molecular dynamic simulations based on the first principles quantum mechanic method. We find even crystallization of a very simple graphene or graphite. If you switch off some of the key informations, like the electronic structures of the carbon atom, it never forms, no matter how long you simulate. But if with all this information available, it forms in a very quick time scale, like 100 picoseconds. You see crystallization very nicely. And interestingly, if you let the temperature fluctuate, you add the information, which is very simple information, high, low temperature, like a thermal aging, it enhances the evolution very quickly and very nicely. If you just randomly put the temperature, the constant temperature, let it run, then time takes much longer. So cognition is necessary not just for complex system, not even just for the very simple molecules. That's mine.
Okay. Thank you.
Sai, I enjoyed that talk. It's very interesting.
Thank you.
So my question is, did Marshall, Cronin, and Gromsky find anything way up there with an MA greater than 15?
No. This is exploratory work with a NASA grant, I guess, or contract, to develop methodology. And the reason it's so attractive is because mass spec is already on spacecraft. It's been sent to Mars. The rover has a mass spec because it's a great way to see what's around on the planet. So if you can do mass spec analysis to look for life, what would you look for? Well, one thing is you could look for oxygen, molecular oxygen O2. And people have been talking about that. But this is a way to look for molecules that could only come from life. So if they find an MA value over, it doesn't matter what the molecule is, it might not be an amino acid, it might be something else. We don't know what life would be made of in other systems. But if you could find something with that, an MA over 15, you can say, oh, they may be life. But they haven't done it. It has nothing like that has happened.
Thank you very much. I have a question which may spark some more discussion.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're looking at these MA values, they're based solely on self-assembly, it looks like.
Yeah.
But in complex systems, you tend to have things that could act as a catalyst.
Yes.
So how are those MA values affected by things like that? Is that taken into regard at all when they're doing these calculations? And how does that affect sort of the whole concept here and the way they want to utilize it? What other molecules may be present and act as some form of catalyst?
That is a great question. And it's one of the things that Larry Funk was addressing when he talked about metal catalysts, because you're right. They don't talk about catalysis at all. They talk about the molecules that exist without talking about how they're. Obviously, almost all the biotic molecules of high complexity are made by catalysis, by protein catalysis. But of course, we don't expect there to be enzymes around at that point. So that's why Larry talked about metals, which can catalyze to some degree. And that would, yes, that would be an exception to this concept.
Just first of all, thinking as a chemist, when you're talking about mass spec, you have to make an ion to be able to analyze it, right? So the method by which you're able to actually make the ion is going to, I think, give you some kind of bias as to what you find. So that's kind of an interesting point about their whole, you know, I don't know how they were making that, but that's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Where I was kind of wondering, though, was more about if you have something like a crystal, I know or just something that's sort of a long chain, you can have sort of, the graphene might be a great example or something like that. Things that once they kind of start, maybe they pattern on themselves or whatever. So you make but you're not really increasing complexity in that sense, right? You're just making more and more of the same kind of thing on the same pattern. Yeah. I assume that doesn't have a high MA.
Well, that's actually also a very interesting point, because the MA, the theoretical part of it, and you can find that in the supplement to the paper, which is about five times the length of the paper.
Yeah.
I didn't really understand it completely, but I got a sense of it. And the sense I got is the MA, if you take two molecules of certain complexity, let's say you take glycine and glycine, and put them together,
right,
you don't double the MA score.
Right.
You just add one.
You just add one.
Right.
Yeah.
So that, I think, pertains to what you're talking about.
Yeah.
If you just have a ligation type of reaction, you're not doubling or tripling the score. You're just moving it up a small amount.
Yeah. So here might be a follow up question then. So, if you've got a mix of three or four amino acids or something like that, simple ones, whatever, and you just sort of randomly polymerize those together, you know, that gives you a certain MA. If they're polymerized in a certain order, now you've got, you know, a biological peptide.
That's
right?
You're right.
So the MA somehow is not capturing the fact that one of these actually has this, you know, essentially functional three-dimensional structure information in it, if you will, that the random thing didn't have. So that's
right.
Just kind of, I don't know how to.
You're absolutely right. I mean, that's a whole other level of, if there was some way to easily by mass spec or some other instrument determine informational content, that would do it. I mean, that's just the gold standard. Yeah. But this is pretty good.
Okay, well, we're at the end of our time for this session, and that's been a great session of discussion, so thanks for your participation. And can we thank Sai for his presentation. Thank you, Sai.